they're spiraling just like you. Welcome back to Spiraling. I'm Katie.
I felt like you had to think about that. I'm Serena.
And we're spiraling.
Hallelujah. We are excited to be back. Season two has been a joy.
It really has been.
It's really nice to be back in this groove. You know, I've been missing routine of all kinds, and so this is great. I have been swapping my indecision toast recently on Wednesdays to indecision rice cakes. I'm really feeling the rice cakes.
I quarantine. Saw that. You know what I think it is? I think I know why.
Why?
I think subconsciously, you're probably just like, you know what? It's been a tough year. I need to crunch something. I need something more angry and like intense, and a rice cake is the same job with like a lot more crunch. It's like, it's a good anger food. You know what I mean?
I have not considered that, but I will absolutely buy into that explanation. I really am into the crunch though.
Like I've been eating a lot of jicama. Are you familiar with the crunch of a jicama?
Oh, love some jicama.
Yeah. And that crunch, man, it's very satisfying in 2020.
So everyone eat more crunchy foods. They're great for anxiety. We have a very exciting episode this week. We are going to keep our spirals tight today. I don't want to put pressure on Katie, but what were you spiraling about this week?
Okay, you know, at length details of a specific spiral that I've just lived in literally for months. But related to that spiral, it's essentially, for everyone listening, it's like overthinking all of my interactions with someone. And the other day I was invited to, this is last week. I was invited to go somewhere, like go to the beach with a friend. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I can't decide. And then I didn't go. And I instantly, it's a decision spiral. I instantly was like, oh my God, I should have gone. This is it. Like, what am I going to do? I even texted them and I was like, have you left yet? I actually want to come. And they were like, yeah, I have on the highway. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, and I was like, oh man, this is more so like, this is heavier than just like FOMO. And like, I kind of regret this. It was like fully anxiety of like, this was it. This is it's over. Like fully went from zero to in my mind.
Okay. So what happened?
Well, I didn't go. And then like the funniest part is that 2 days later, the same situation happened where I was, you know, invited again. It wasn't a big deal. And I said, yes. And then that time I got in the car and I instantly was like, I don't want to be here. I really didn't.
No.
And I was so upset and I had the exact same anxiety, the opposite direction of like, I shouldn't have gone. I knew I shouldn't have gone. I had towels in the dryer, like in the washer that needed to be in the dryer, like all these reasons. It just goes to show, it goes back to the decision episode of like, there isn't one decision that's better necessarily. And like, you just have to align with it and like own it, or you're in the fog of the indecision. And it was rough.
Oh God, that's the worst. I'm sorry. That is those kinds of things, like the like, should I, shouldn't I? I made the decision. Now I'm committed. I don't want to do it.
I just felt so foolish and silly and like, oh my God, why is this such a big deal in my mind? This is not a big deal.
We love to make bigger deals out of smaller deals. Well, do we feel like you are going to have more of the same spiral, or do we think we've put it to bed because there were two back-to-back ones that prove that the grass is always greener?
Oh, wow. That's really cool, actually. I guess that very uncomfortable couple of days, maybe, I hope you're right. I hope we put it to bed. I don't know if I'm going to bank on that. I'm sure I'll have an indecision. I think also too, like I've just had so few plans and so few like invitations that I kind of forgot what it was like, where now I'm like, oh, this is how I used to live all the time, deciding what to do and what not to do, you know? So I think
the one silver lining of quarantine, we have no social decisions to make.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't guarantee that I'm not going to spiral about something similar in life or on this podcast ever again. But I will say, I think probably not for a minute after that.
I like that. That's always good when we think we won't have the same spiral for a minute. We've got so many, such a variety of spirals.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Why would we want to have the same one twice? Mine is like a silly one. And I have talked about this as like one of my recurring spirals in real life. It hasn't happened in a while because of quarantine. But first of all, I want to preface this by saying that this, according to my therapist, is one of the top ways that anxiety manifests for people. So AKA is just an incredibly common spiral.
Wow.
It's that I've left. Thank you. It's that I've left the stove or oven on, right? For some people, it's an iron. Some people, it's a curling iron. It's basically that you've left something on that could burn down your house, right? Yeah. So I used to have this spiral. I would go through phases with it. And it got really bad, typically if I was like going out of town for the weekend or going on vacation. And one time we actually had to call our landlord when we were on vacation, because my anxiety was so bad that I had like left the oven on that I had to know. But I haven't had it in quarantine because I'm always in the house. So I'm like, did I leave the oven on? Let me go check and turn it off. So it's been lovely and calming in that respect. But the other night I went to sleep and I woke up at like, I went, you know, I don't know, 1:30 in the morning. I'd been asleep for a couple hours and I was convinced that I had left the stovetop on from a cooking class, because sometimes you can turn sometimes you can turn them all the way to low so there's no flame, but they're still on and releasing gas, you know? So I was like, oh God. So I was lying in bed and I knew it was my anxiety manifesting itself, which would woken me up. Sometimes I have like, you know, mini anxiety attacks that will wake me up in the night for no reason. And I was like, oh God, don't go downstairs. It felt like caving to my anxiety to go downstairs. Cause I was like, you have never left one of these burners on after a class. You do dishes afterwards for a long time. We ate dinner in the kitchen. You definitely didn't leave it on. And I had this conversation in my head for a good 10 minutes as my anxiety was growing. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to be able to go back to sleep unless I go check on this. So I like creep downstairs naked, obviously go to sleep naked in the dark to the kitchen, turn the lights on. Obviously the stove is off. I feel ridiculous like standing in like a lit kitchen in the middle of the night ass naked, like, why are you like this? And then went to bed and I like obviously woke Logan up because we've been locking the door to our bedroom. Logan has been locking it, being like, I don't know, somebody could break in quarantine, like may as well have the door locked. So I had to like unlock the door surreptitiously to get downstairs and then relock it when I came up, and it was a whole thing. So that was my spiral. I have not had another stove on, off, oven on, off spiral in quarantine. I'm hoping that one gave me the peace of mind to be like, you never leave the stove on here.
Yeah.
Stop it. But well, yeah, that was my spiral this week.
Yeah, you talked about, I don't think it was a spiral per se last season, but we talked about this particular brand of spiraling. And I remember you saying that you have left it on enough times that like doesn't make
sense,
like every time it was off, which sucks.
Yes, I have left the oven on multiple times and left the apartment and had confirmation from Logan or, you know, someone else that the oven was on. And that stovetop gas thing, I have done that in our New York apartment twice where I thought it was off, but I had really just turned it down to low where there was no flame and gas was leaking out, and had our neighbors text us and be like, are you cooking something or is the stove maybe on? Because it smells like gas in the hallway, which is really, now I'm just giving everyone panic attacks. Sorry, spiraling fans. But like, yes. So I think the reason this is such a huge trigger for me is because I often do leave the stove and oven on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I just haven't in quarantine.
Yeah, man. Wow, that is one. It's one that, like, I should have probably more than I do, but I don't know. I think I probably said this last time. My mom has it so bad with the garage door. So yes. She, it's like, let's do a drive-by. And I, to the point where I'm home, I'm like, we are not going around the block. How many times have you done it? And she's like, it's always down. Like, literally every time. And I'm like, even if it wasn't, like, it's not that big of a deal. It's not like the stove. Like, it's fine.
Totally. Oh, man. Well, I hope everyone listening was able to relate to this one in some way, shape, or form, because whether it's the garage door or the curling iron or the stove, you are not alone in thinking that you did not do the thing that you want to have done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, those were tight spirals. Good for us.
Good for us. Yeah, seriously.
So the subject of this episode is anxiety setbacks. This is sort of a two-pronged episode. We want to talk specifically about managing setbacks in the actual experience of our anxiety. For example, when we revert to our early anxiety selves, when we think we have things under control, but then also talk about setbacks in life, personally and professionally, that can trigger our anxiety. Was that a good description? If it wasn't, perhaps it will become more clear as we start talking.
Yeah, I got it. But I also knew prior, so I'm not sure, but I think so.
Oh my God, I'm really tired this week. So I apologize in advance if I'm not my most articulate self today. However, I feel like when I'm tired, I'm
coffee and it's like 3:30 here. So that'll tell you what my situation is.
Okay, so let's start with the actual anxiety setback. So, like, what does it feel like when you revert to an anxiety state that you thought that you had moved on from, so to speak? So, like, when I, for example, just to make this crystal clear, like, when I first developed anxiety, and I think this is the case for a lot of people when they're new to anxiety, anxiety is terrifying in general. It's particularly disorienting and, like, absolutely fucked up when you first develop anxiety and you've never felt those feelings before. Mm-hmm. And I do think that those of us with, like, you know, anxiety disorders or severe anxiety, there was probably latent anxiety for most of our lives that manifested itself in other ways. And maybe we just didn't notice it per se, but I'm talking about, like, when I started having panic attacks and was, like, literally having physical and mental symptoms of anxiety on a regular basis. And I was like, what is going on? So that was a solid, I don't know, for me, it was a solid year of not having any, starting from scratch and not having any management tools and just feeling kind of out of control and, like, pretty much bad most of the time. For you, I feel like this was so recent for you. So you're only in, like, what, year two?
Yeah. And it was like, I guess it's a slow burn. I mean, I think, again, last season when we gave our anxiety story, we both said that, you know, we kind of come from anxious folk. Like, this is not, you know, it's not an anomaly, like, if we look back on our childhood. But I think mine was like a really slow burn. I think I diagnosed myself with anxiety from you and being your friend and, like, your work before a therapist ever said the word to me. And then when a therapist confirmed it and spoke about it to me, like, with my specific symptoms, I was just kind of, I felt good. I felt differently, I guess, because mine is so different than yours. Like, I just felt really articulated and I just felt really seen of, like, oh, there's a name for this thing I've always felt and has, like, made my relationships and life pretty tricky sometimes. Like, and another person I really respect and like and think is really cool has it too and talks about it. And there's a bunch of other people too. Like, it was really liberating. But I understand what you're saying of, like, I still didn't have the tools or the language really until I met you and then talked about it more specifically in therapy.
Yeah. And I think that's my hope always, is that if more people talk super openly about their anxiety in their relationships, romantically, sure, but also just amongst their peers, their colleagues, their friends, etc., then more people will be able to recognize it in themselves, you know, and it just be the change you want to see in the world, yada yada.
I mean, it's literally the point of this podcast is like what, yes, we've talked about this, but what Serena did to with me of saying, of me being like, oh, this person I like and respect is still able to be to me so successful and prolific and kind and nice and have this life that's really great, and she feels this so intensely and has and is able to talk about it honestly. And I think us doing this is like, and more people are doing this on the internet now, which is great, because I think it's really,
yeah,
feeling alone in this is the worst.
1000%. And I think that isolation and loneliness is the worst part of the early anxiety days, quote unquote, because there's so much shame and guilt and fear involved. And then also for me, in addition to the fear, there was also sort of this persistent underlying worry that my future was going to be largely defined by my anxiety, just because I really didn't have a grip on it at all. And yeah, so when we're talking about managing setbacks, what I mean is anxiety starts out really scary. People mm-hmm. are always overwhelmed. Something I wish somebody had said to me over and over and over that first year was, it's going to get better, because there were months where I was like, this is my life now. And yeah, I never thought that I would come out of that. So having somebody tell me that it would get easier and it would get better and it would require work, but I would be okay, so to speak, and that I would not be defined by my anxiety would be huge. So I'm saying that today to anyone who needs to hear that. And I'm happy to repeat it over and over and over for you. But over time, for most of us who are able to and are lucky enough to recognize our anxiety and ask for help, whether that's, you know, from friends and family, from a therapist, or seek help themselves just through educating themselves about anxiety and experimenting with management tools, over time, you do get a better handle on your anxiety, or it's possible to. And so we've talked at length in this podcast, in every episode, essentially, about tools that have helped us manage our anxiety. So definitely go back and listen to the Tools podcast if you happen to be new here. But over time, when you employ those tools regularly, while they may not work the same every single day, or you may have bad days and good days, overall, when you have a bunch of management strategies that you're employing while also trying new things and taking care of yourself, your anxiety can get better. That doesn't mean it goes away. I don't feel like, this is my personal opinion, I'm not a doctor, but like to me, anxiety can't be cured. It's just managed. And yeah, you can live a wonderful, full life when your anxiety is properly managed.
Oh, I just have a question about that, but don't forget what you're going to say. Sorry.
No, go for it.
So Serena's therapist happens to be an anxiety specialist. Have you
Twist asked, of fate.
Yeah. Have you asked him about that? I'm curious.
Yeah, he's a proponent of management. He's like, you're not going to get rid of this. But also, as we've discussed in the past, like there are elements of my anxiety that have served me so well. Like I do think that my anxiety has acted as sort of a fire under my ass in many ways. And I don't want to lose it completely. I want to manage it to the point where I can still harness a little bit of it for good, but also yeah, like not feel panicked on a daily basis. So that's always my goal, just to like yeah, keep a little bit of it. But yeah, it's not something that you just cure. It's something that you manage. And like I said, it can be managed so effectively. And over the years, you know, for me, it's been over a decade. I have gone through phases where like I've had no anxiety for like weeks, sometimes even a couple months, no panic attacks, feel great. And then I will not, the generalized anxiety will come back, or I'll have a panic attack or whatever. Or I go through like a really, really bad anxious phase out of the blue. And every time that happens, I feel that, I experience that first as a setback. I'm able to to move through it. But the first thing, for example, I had a panic attack this past weekend. It was really bad. I haven't had a panic attack like that in a long time. I've had I think I've had two in quarantine. And then I've had some like those ones where I'm sort of on the verge, but I wouldn't categorize it as a full panic attack. But I had an actual panic attack this last weekend, like leading to me lying in a dark room for an hour and like crying and all of it. And I forgot, this is actually fortuitous that we are recording this now, because that was on a Saturday. It's now Thursday. I am still exhausted from that. Like, it is so physically taxing to have a panic attack. And it's so draining. And I always forget, because I don't have panic attacks that often anymore. So I always forget and I'm weirdly surprised by being like, wow, this fucking sucks even more than I remembered. Yeah. And so the first, while in the panic attack, when you haven't had one for a while, you're like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? What the fuck is happening? Even though you know what's happening. So I was able to like, be like, okay, you're having a panic attack. You haven't had one in a while. It's okay. It can only last for a finite period of time. You will be fine. And, you know, focusing like on a lot of the self-talk stuff. But after the attack, like Sunday, I was like, part of the, and this is a very normal thinking, what I'm about to say. So if you relate to this, know that like you... This is very common just based on A, I'm also saying this as if I am an expert. I'm not. According to my therapist, this is very common.
He is an expert. We love him.
But part of a panic disorder is fear of the next panic attack. So while I don't, like my panic disorder has been very much under control for many years now, and I primarily struggle with generalized anxiety, when I had this panic attack afterwards, I was like, oh, fuck me. Am I going back into like full panic? Like, am I going to start having panic attacks on a regular basis? And that obviously jacks up my generalized anxiety, because it's anticipatory anxiety of the next panic attack. But also it like really activates this part of my brain that I usually have in check. That's like the why are you like this? Why don't you have a handle on this? You were doing so well. It's the you were doing so well that yeah. always comes screaming through. Like, you had a handle on it. What happened?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think that a lot of times there's just not an explanation for it. So I always have to go back. It's very humbling when something like this happens, because we can sit here and I can be on my high horse and be all about the self-talk and the reframe and the legs up the wall. And then like, it's very humbling to be like, oh wow, we back at square one now. Like, you got to take all of your own advice. And that is a horse pill to swallow right now. And it just, I let myself have a little, you know, pity party for a second, because it does suck when you have a setback like this. Yeah. And also you're also exhausted. So when you're exhausted, I mean, when I'm exhausted, I don't manage my emotions as well. Yeah. And also fatigue is an anxiety trigger for me, but I just had to like recalibrate. It took me like 2 days to recalibrate and being like, this isn't set again, setback, calling it a setback is just how you frame it. Like, we could, and going back to my favorite reframe, why not just like reframe it as like, this is what my anxiety is. It ebbs and flows, and there are peaks and valleys, and there was a peak, but that doesn't mean that now I live on a plateau, you know? Right. Like, I don't have to be worried that now I'm going to go into a phase of like panic attack after panic attack, and I'm not, you know, a worse person, or I haven't failed in some way because I had a panic attack. It just is what it is, you know? And you know, yeah. I hate to say that, but it is.
Well, I really relate to that. And this is the other piece of what we're going to talk about today. A big anxiety trigger for me is that exact feeling of, oh man, I've come so reverting, essentially, of like,
yes,
going backwards, especially in I mean, I guess it's setbacks. This is really the title of this episode, and like
yeah,
talking about here, but like in life, it's like, I'll give a silly example, like social media, right? It's like having a certain amount of followers for months and months and months, and then suddenly it being different than it was and being way less. Having something and then not having something is really jarring and is really triggering to my anxiety, because it's change, you know, it's change on top of, and it's kind of negative change, you know, it's not, it's the opposite of growth. It stinks.
Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And I feel like, because, you know, you've only recognized your anxiety more recently, do you feel like, and this is a very heavy question, I'm sorry to drop it on you with no warning and you can ignore me, but looking back, do you think that you have in your life like experienced a setback in, well, I guess this could also apply to eating disorder recovery. It's like,
yeah,
the concept that you have done so well and then you've fallen into, you've reverted in some way in.
Yeah.
And how did you deal with that? I'm not articulating this well. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think the word you're looking for is relapse, you know?
Yes.
and yes, you know, I mean, again, that's the example I should have used, honestly. And like, and I'm so cool to be open about this, especially now. I think in the last season, I was like in the middle of a relapse, really. So like, I didn't, not in the middle of it, but I was in the middle of healing it, basically, of like realizing that I was in it again. And it's happened to me since I realized I had an eating disorder when I was in high school. You know what I mean? Like it's really ebbed and flowed. And it sometimes I feel like that particular mental health situation is like it's different than anxiety in the sense of, I do believe that, you know, what your therapist said about anxiety of it can't be healed, it can only be managed. I think it's pretty similar with eating disorders, except I think it can be very, very, very much healed, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, I haven't gotten to that place yet in my life. I hope I do. And I've been there for moments, but like mine is still pretty strong, where like I sometimes feel like that is a cut that didn't originally heal properly and got really infected and gross. And so now it will heal, but it's not quite right. You know, like it's never quite right because it's too far gone. So there are even moments now where like I have been in a really good place with it, but I'll notice just how chill someone else is. And I'm like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that and not overthink about it. Or I'm never going to be like there's a circuit in my brain that like cannot, there's just a bit off there. And I think those relapses are so painful from an eating, this is a whole tangent, but from an eating disorder's perspective, because, and I'll link to this, but I wrote this essay for Refinery 29 years ago about anorexia nostalgia. And it got picked up by like all of these, like the Daily Mail wrote a thing about it and all of these outlets because.
Holy shit.
Yeah, because it was, you know, that was what the headline was, like, girl has anorexia. Like it was not my term, but like, it's a thing, you know, like it's an actual thing of like, when you have been in a body that is not the body that you are naturally meant to be at, but you were able to maintain it for a period of time. And it happens to be the body shape that society and our beauty standards and the media reveres and gives you compliments for, and you get validation for, and you get opportunities for, because our world is fucked up in that way. When you have had that and then you don't, and for a healthy reason, you miss that validation and you miss those compliments and you want to return to it and you miss, you know, the clothes fitting and all of that. And that has been the case for me again and again and again. And I'm in a period of that right now where all of the clothes I had no longer fit me and I have to get all new clothes again. And it is painful, especially because it's like A, jarring and change. And B, I've done it before and I've done it a bunch of times and here I am again, you know? And that I think it is, growth is not linear. Sometimes we have to learn lessons again and again and again and hurt people and ourselves in the process. And that's okay. I wish it was just like, okay, and we're onward and we're upward and the followers grow and the this grows and the relationships grow. But that hasn't been the case for me.
That's not real life.
Yeah.
But that actually, first of all, I don't think I've read that piece. So now I'm very excited to read it because Katie is a beautiful writer, is so talented in that respect. But also, this is a perfect sort of transition. I want to ask you a follow-up question. We want to talk about how personal and professional setbacks can act as anxiety triggers. So I'm just curious to know, like, when you do find yourself relapsing into like past eating disorder behaviors, does that trigger your anxiety as well? Like, I know that eating, having an eating disorder is separate from dealing with anxiety and in your case, depression, although I'm sure there is a lot of overlap, but do you notice an uptick in your anxiety when you recognize yourself engaging in behaviors that you thought that you were past or are frustrated with yourself?
Well, this is a very complicated question because it's physiological as well. You know what I mean? So like, I remember going into, it was actually last winter when I was back in treatment, outpatient treatment, working with a dietitian again. And we were talking about my anxiety and my depression, like mental health stuff. And it was the end of our session and I had been crying and she like kind of looked at me. It was very sweet and pre-COVID grabbed my shoulders and was just like, I really believe when you work on this issue, meaning eating enough at that time, it's going to help your anxiety and these other issues so much that they will dissolve. And I don't think that they necessarily dissolve fully. Like, of course there's like funny things that trigger like kind of like my spiral today and that sort of thing is still there. But it's like what we talked about in the tools episode of like, you're really good about this, Serena, and I really admire you for this, but not eating enough. It's funny because it's two things. It's like, yes, it triggers my anxiety, but there's this moment when I'm not eating enough. It's also a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
It also gets me pretty high because there's a moment before I'm like in starvation mode. That's like, it's kind of euphoric. And I want to be careful about this being triggering in any way, but it's something I turn to for comfort for my anxiety, controlling my food. And in my case, not eating enough or overeating or whatever. And if I don't eat enough, or I eat in a way that makes me feel uncomfortable, that also triggers my anxiety. So sometimes I feel like I can't even do anything. And then sometimes it's also like I've had my eating disorder in the sense of in an orthorexic sort of a way of like certain things I can't even eat because of whatever, whatever, whatever. So getting to a point where it's like, it's not about the food. Try to eat enough. Try to like be nice to your body. Try to just like know that food isn't just fuel. It's also connection and love and community and weird and fun and this like physical thing. It's so complicated. We're going to do a body episode and I will talk about this a bit more. And I want to say too, like, I am not an eating disorder specialist. We eventually will have guests and I'll have my friend Christy Harrison, who is the person I turn to for all of this. And I highly recommend listening to the Food Psych podcast for anyone struggling with their relationship to food or their body. And I have so many resources for eating disorder recovery that just email me or Spiraling Community and we'll send you those. And there's so many episodes of Let It Out about this. I'm not an expert, but I'm very comfortable sharing my experience. And I think it is sadly very relatable to a lot of people.
I love how open you are about this. I think it's so important for people also to be able to hear your stories, which again, I know is such a big part of Let It Out, but I think it just is really, I don't know, there's something comforting always about knowing that you're not alone in whatever you're struggling with. So thank you for sharing all that. I know I dropped that question.
I like it. No, I think it's really good to talk about, like, in the same way that you were so helpful for me to say, oh shit, like I think I have anxiety and I think it's kind of like this and she's okay. Like, I think a lot of people can do that with me of like, oh shit, I'm really weird with food too, but like she's okay and working on that, you know?
Yeah. I think absolutely.
Yeah. The more I talk about it, the more messages I get about it. And I'm going to be talking about it for the rest of my life because it's this weird thing that, you know, it's like my main, I have a lot of them, but like it's my kind of main thing. And it's one that, like, much like anxiety, like it's not drinking, it's not smoking, it's something that I can't abstain from. I'm going to have to learn to deal with. And it's particularly complicated right now, I think.
Yeah.
Like, much like everything, but especially this food stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I just think it's wonderful that you talk about that. And obviously there's a lot of overlap in general with your eating disorder recovery and anxiety. We also talked about breakups at length and their intersection with anxiety. We talk a lot about that in life transitions episode, so we don't need to dive into that now. But do you think there are any other personal examples that stand out of like personal setbacks that have triggered anxiety in some way?
Personal setbacks that triggered anxiety. Oh man, yeah. Why did I like take that in as if we haven't discussed this prior?
I was like, yes.
I kind of honestly, I was listening to you, but I was stretching. Like I needed to stretch. And so I was like really focused on my stretch. And then I just fully listened to your question as if I hadn't like known we were going to talk about this.
I love that. That also like gave me like a mini moment of panic, like out of body experience being like, did we not talk about this? Like, did we not say we
were- like she's doing such good acting right now, but like, I really- oh, that's funny, man. But yes, I mean, okay, so should I just get into it then of my personal and professional setbacks?
Yeah. Yeah, by all means.
That's the point of what we're doing here, right? Okay.
I'll interject with mine if there's any overlap.
Okay, great. I'm having anxiety of a setback of I don't know how to record a podcast.
Also, like, let's be real. We are obviously having that setback in quarantine. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, wow. Well, okay. So I have, when we were prior talking about this, this was so easy for me to come up with. Like, they just roll out real easy setbacks. Really have an abundance of them. I mean, I could go on all day. And again, we're going to keep this tight. But I think professionally, I'll start with recent ones. I mean, I think in the last year, the ones that have really gotten me are, well, okay, first of all, this is a very long story that Serena knows at length. And I've told in my other podcast, Let It Out, but I'll just say it briefly here. I had this podcast, Let It Out, that I wanted to make into a magazine. And then I realized I didn't have the budget for that or really want to do that. But the ship was already moving in that direction. And I invested so much time and money, so much money on a project that I didn't really want to see through. And then I had to pivot. And that felt like a major setback, an embarrassment, and a big bummer. But ultimately, when I was able to stop, because I really just like didn't know what to do next, and I stopped, and I went to Europe, and I didn't work, and I eventually got another idea, and it ended up being okay. So that was a setback that was huge and kind of underlying a lot of things, but ended up being okay. And then one that like I'm still really dealing with that kind of happened congruently was that at that same time, and this was really last year, like when we were recording season one, I, you know, as everyone on this podcast knows very well, but at this point, if you've been listening to them all, I had this breakup. I was down, we'll say. And during that time, I realized I really wanted to focus on my writing. Like I really wanted to develop that craft and I wanted to get better and I wanted to, you know, eventually write a book of essays or keep writing or write another book or publish some things. And so I took looked up MFA programs and I was going to go back to school. And I decided to just take a ton of classes in New York City because there was so much available to me there. And I did that. And that felt really great. And I had so many encouraging teachers. And I really maybe delusionally thought it would be pretty easy to start again, publishing and pitching. And I was writing a column at the time. And I'd gotten some clips over the years. And at that point, I got so much rejection in my writing, just from then till now, really, of like, op-eds that I've submitted, different columns that I've submitted, different editors. And like, I would just go down and it was just rejection, 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 to the point where I this is literally like happening now, where I'm just like, I don't know if I should keep doing this. I don't know if it's my time. I want to keep developing the craft to the point where I now, you know, I'm writing something else. Like, I'm working on a screenplay with a friend that we're writing back and forth just for fun because it feeds me. And I'm writing some short stories, and I am still writing essays, but the pitching and publishing and, you know, it's tough and it's uncontrollable. But that setback of like every time I would get a rejection, or like with the magazine not working out, that would take me down so low because I was so high from the idea of it. Like, oh, if this did work out, like I could feel that.
Yes.
And then when
Katie's a magical thinker.
Yeah, totally. Yes, yes, yes. This really triggers that because it's like I go from 0 to 60, and I do this in relationships. I do it when I meet a new person. I do it when I get a new outfit where I'm just like, this is gonna change my life, you know? And so it's a really
Wait, you guys, I feel the need. I do not want to interrupt your flow right now because you are on a roll. But I also need to casually remind everyone, we started this podcast, Katie was literally planning our like arena tour.
Oh my God, yes!
So I really need everybody to continue to share about spiraling so that we don't have to have this podcast be one of Katie's professional setbacks.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Okay, let me add a little bit more context.
We also had a marketing dinner for spiraling last, when was it? Last fall? Uh-huh. Was it this past fall? After the first season wrapped, and we had a bunch of people like in the mental health space, and people who are a mental health advocate. It was meant to be like a promotional dinner and not a single
Serena
person.
Serena cooked all day.
I did, that was true. It's just like so characteristic of us. Like everyone came, we had the day ever, and then we realized that we took any pictures or was anything. So it was just like a lovely dinner for friends, but we absolutely botched the marketing element.
Yep, that's us. That's us in a nutshell. And that's, so I tell that story all the time of like, A, the marketing dinner, I literally told it today, but the fact that like you really called me out on that, where we are sitting at Jack's wife, Frida, and having breakfast, and I'm like, you know, Serena, like, do you know Two Dope Queens? Like, have you watched their HBO special? Like, yeah. I can really see us with this, and I can really see these live episodes that we're going to do, and like, you know, we'll travel. Like, it's going to be great.
Like, here we are doing our not sponsored podcast. Oh, we love you guys. Thank you for being here. Okay, I'm sorry I interrupted you. You
left. So if you want to see us at King's Theater, leave a goddamn review.
Yeah.
Coming soon. Coming not so soon.
Yeah. We have a 5-year plan.
So okay, so there are my professional ones. Tell me about yours.
Oh my God. So actually, I don't want anyone to steal my idea. I actually wanted to start a podcast before we did this podcast about failure, because I think it's one of those things where we don't talk about it enough. I mean, pretty much everyone I know, like all of my close friends, we talk about our failures all the time with each other. And I know so many, like, you know, I have so much admiration and respect for the men and women in my life, and not a single one of them has, you know, made it to where they are today without a long list of professional failures. And I think that it happens in every single person's life. And as I'm always going on and on about, like, all of the teachable moments are in failure. You learn nothing from success, you know? And I think that occasionally you listen to something like How I Built This or another podcast that's like career oriented. And every once in a while, you get a story where it's like, I failed 9 times and the 10th time was when I was successful. But I find failure fascinating. And yes, like failure for me is, it used to be an anxiety trigger for me. it's not so much anymore because I've been working so hard these past few years to redefine my definition of success because failure was such a trigger for me. And I knew no way that I could sustain the definition in my head of success where my success was tied to numbers or accolades in general, because that's not sustainable. And I knew, first of all, I was never satisfied when I hit whatever numbers I was going for, whether that was dollars earned, books sold, page views, whatever, all of these numbers. Because as you hit a goal, it disappears in the rear so quickly, you're already on to the next thing. And then I just knew that I could never always keep those numbers going. I didn't want to live my life worrying that I was dropping the ball in some arena. Like you mentioned earlier about social media numbers going down. If your entire worth is tied to increasing numbers, then you're always going to have this fear that plagues you day in and day out. Like when you wake up, it's like, how am I keeping the numbers up today? You know, and I experienced that for a long time. And it was so awful for my anxiety. And I got off on my tangent there about redefining success. But the number of failures that I've had, and it just doesn't make sense to like come on every day and be like, I got this many rejections today, or this project fell through. But I'm going to give you a list of some very large ones that really stick out in my mind.
Great.
So I wrote a book proposal pre-Dude Diet that I worked on with another writer because I was like 24. I'd never written a book proposal before. Obviously, I didn't know how to write one. It's, you know, a very specific format. So I got paired up with this woman who helps write book proposals. We worked on this proposal for like 3 months. And then it was shopped around to publishers. One publisher was interested. And my agent made it seem like it was a deal. So I put all of my eggs in the basket and was like, well, I'm working on a cookbook now. And they hemmed and hawed over it for several months. And then ultimately passed. Nobody else was interested. So like the bottom fell out for me. And I was just like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Like, do I need to go work in a restaurant? Like, do I have to go get a corporate job? How am I? I'm not doing this book. My blog is sort of middling. I can't support myself with that. I hate private chefing. Why am I doing this? Like it caused basically a full meltdown, like panic attacks, emotional meltdown. I cried for like a week. It was ridiculous. And that was the hugest one. But then like a few years ago, I spent like 3 months developing, this sounds absurd, but it was like the first virtual reality cooking show with like this virtual reality company. I flew out to LA. We had the proposal. We had the meet, lots of agents. And then it just died. And there was no real explanation for it. I don't really know what happened to it. My agent was just like, yeah, that's not a thing anymore. It was really sort of jarring because, again, I had such high expectations. There was there were a lot of these on a much smaller scale, but these are just like the huge ones that are coming to mind. I was like in the running to do a co-hosted show with another food person who is way more high profile than I am. We did a screen test together to test our chemistry and like spent a whole day filming and the whole shebang. And I actually have no idea if the show ever got made with the other person they were testing, but again, just didn't happen. And they were like, yeah, that's not happening. So those things for me were like really big potential opportunities. I hung a lot of big hopes and dreams on that. I was like, this one is my big break. I know it. And so then when it fell through, that professional setback caused massive anxiety spirals. It's the disappointment, but then it led to what if, what if, what if? And that what if spiral, what am I going to do now? What's next? The inability to, I don't know what's coming down the pipe, which is what a lot, like, you know, the majority of us are also dealing with in quarantine right now, like has always been terrible for my anxiety because it thrives in uncertainty. So like those setbacks, like really also were huge setbacks for me on the anxiety front. And then I would say like 2 years ago, I really committed to sort of redefining success for myself and being like, I want to determine my self-worth outside of my career and focusing more on, you know, things being like, well, like, what if my book doesn't sell that well? What's the worst case scenario? Sort of playing these things out and being like, how can I develop a sense of self-worth that is not directly tied to society's definition of success? And to me, that's more developing like an existential sense of confidence and feeling good about the work that I put out into the world. And obviously I need to make money, but like, it's less about that now. And so I wanted to give you a happy sort of growth story. And I've never told Katie this story. So I really feel like you're going to get a kick out of this.
Oh, I'm very excited. Wait, can I just pick up on something that you said right now about the existential thing? I think that the other thing that I want to mention is that, like, we talked about this a little bit a second ago, like the dopamine hit of getting too, like, managing our highs, right? Like, yes, our highs being too high and then my lows being too low, like managing, like it's uncoupling my self-worth from anything outside of myself, from career success, relationship success, physical success, anything like that, because it, like you said, it's all fleeting. And I think that's like losing our ego, right? Like that's becoming, there's a real esoteric element of that, that's losing ourselves a bit, because that's how we identify in the world and have differentiation and are validated. But I think the pandemic and quarantine are kind of good for that, because it is this strange kind of primal situation that is causing us all to be so dysregulated and out of our, you know, normal things that we define as identifying, you know, of like how we dress and how we interact in the world and who we get invited to see and, you know, how we spend our money and time, and all of that is taken from us. And so we're a bit slightly closer to, you know, who we are on the inside, you know? And I think as you were speaking, I thought, and as I even like thought about all these professional and personal failures, especially professional, honestly, like I have so many, like we were saying. And I think the reason I feel like I have so many is maybe because the negative ones are so sticky, right? And like the positive ones, we have to do, like, everyone knows this, that like a positive thought is so much stickier than a negative thought. And like, I think we should maybe do an episode. I mean, dude, it's us. We're not going to do this episode, but like for our mental health, it would be so good to do an episode that's like talking about all of our successes. You and I would never do that, but that would be so much better, because here we are. We can talk about our fucking failures all day.
That's so true. And I think also like both of us like secretly love a little bit of self-flagellation. Mm-hmm. But I love what you said about expectations, because that's a huge part of this equation for me in terms of managing my anxiety in the face of setbacks. It all starts with managing my expectations in the first place, so that I have so much, I fall less hard, you know, like I'm not falling as far because my expectations weren't as high. So that is exactly what I think this story will show you. But last fall, I got an email through, when you like do online stuff and freelance stuff, you sign up for a bazillion websites where people might discover you. Do you do that too, Katie? I don't do it as much anymore, but I used to. It was like ways that brands can find you for partnerships and on-camera talent opportunities. Most of these things I signed up for years ago. And so like my information is still in the database. So I get this email from one of these, you know, connector websites or whatever. And it's like, congratulations, QVC has identified you as like a top tier talent option for their on-camera like hosting gig or whatever that happened to be in the culinary space. So it was like, please send, if you're interested in being considered for this opportunity, please send a 10-minute audition tape, one cut, like you can't cut it, like one take video, introducing yourself, talking about your background, why you're a good fit for this, and then selling one piece of cookware from your kitchen.
I love it. This part I do know, and I love this part.
I don't know why. Typically, like, this just caught me on a good day in the sense, or the first email didn't. The first email I think I saw and was like, this probably isn't legit. Like, I'm not going to do it. And then I got a follow-up email like 2 weeks later being like, QVC is still really interested in you. If you want to potentially do this, please send your demo tape by end of day today. And it was like 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. And I don't know, past me would have panicked and been like, oh my God, like I have to practice. I have to do my hair and makeup. I have to do all these things. And I was just like, ah, fuck it. Like I've been doing this. Keep in mind, like I've been doing this kind of thing, like auditioning for things and trying to do on-air stuff for, I don't know, 8 years. So I was like, fuck it. I just like put on a dress. I didn't bother with my hair and makeup. I put my camera on a tripod and I just like shot a 10-minute video in one take, which was deeply absurd. Also, I will find it and send it to you, Katie, because it was so funny. Not like intentionally, like it was just so weird. Like I like popped up from behind my counter and I was like, hello, like thank you for being here. Like it was outrageous. And then I sold my Le Creuset cast iron razor, which is my favorite thing that I've ever owned, basically. So I was very into it and probably just like absurdly enthusiastic, which is probably what they were going for. So I sent this in and then completely forget about it, right? Like it was 10 minutes of my life, again, with the managed expectations. I've had enough, you know, enough past failures and rejections at this point that I was just like, whatever, I'll send this off. It probably disappears into the ether. And then like a month later, I get this like, congratulations, you're in the final round of QVC's talent search. The last step is for you to come to our live studios and do like an on-air demo with our host. And I was like, what? So I ended up going all the way, I think it's in like New Jersey, but it was far. It was like a 3.5-hour drive from New York.
Yeah.
I go out there and it's right, I think it was like November.
Yeah.
And they were fully set up for Christmas, which was hilarious. And they had sent me a one sheet of 3 products that I would be selling. And it was a pressure cooker, a can opener, and like a 10-piece cookware set. And it just had a paragraph underneath it. And it was like, memorize this information. All other information will be provided day of. So I arrived. There's one other woman there with me. And I don't know if it was just the two of us vying for this. I don't know if there was a pool of like 5 people. I have no idea. But we go in and they introduce us to like the culinary director. And it's the full QVC set. It's also Christmas. There's Christmas trees everywhere. It's this giant set and there's like 3 tables set up. If you've ever watched QVC or HSN, you know, it's like the tables with the products on it. And like you go through, there's all these pressure cookers and the guy, the culinary head is like, okay, so here's what you're going to do. And I'm going to tell you pretty much what he told me. He's like, okay, so there's 3 pressure cookers. In the first one, there's potatoes. You're going to take the potatoes out. You're going to mash them. You're going to add the cream and butter and the chives. Then you're going to move on to the second pressure cooker. In this pressure cooker, there's beef stew. You're going to ladle it over the potatoes. In the third pressure cooker, there's stewed peaches. You're going to ladle those out, add the scoops of ice cream on top, and serve. Moving over to the can opener, you're going to open 3 different types of cans, small, medium, and large. Once you're done with that, you're going to move over to the cookware set. You're going to make a steak. You're going to make a pan sauce. There's cream, seasonings, everything for your pan sauce here. Make whatever you want. Then you put the steaks back in the pan sauce. You put them in this miniature oven behind you. You move on to making corn. You're going to make an herb butter for your corn. There's all the ingredients you might need here. You're going to make that herb butter. You're going to brush it on the corn. You're going to put it on a platter next to your steaks. You're going to ladle the pan sauce over top and you will answer any questions that David asks you. Are we clear? And I was like, oh my, sure. Like, I didn't even bother asking him questions. I was like, are you fucking serious right now? Like, why not? Let's see how this goes. And then, like, their host, the actual QVC host, like, shows up on set. They put us on camera. We do that whole thing that you just said. I mess up like 800 times. There is, you know, stadium seating in front of the stage. And there's like 10 people that file in and sit in there with clipboards and like talk to each other and take notes while I'm doing this. And then they were just like, thanks for coming in. Bye. And then I like drove 3.5 hours back to New York.
Oh my God. You know how you have your instant happy of Logan like jumping off the
Yes.
It's like a video. We've spoken about it before. She watches it and it makes her smile. I'm so happy this is recorded because you explaining that man's directions to you, I was laughing so hard. That's my, not my
Instagram. It was so absurd, but I was so, I came home to Logan that night and he was like, how did it go? And I was like, honestly, given the ridiculous circumstances, I think it went well. I have never, you know, sold something in this respect before. And also you're getting pepper. Oh, I will leave you with one hilarious anecdote. The can openers, they were these like weird electronic can openers, and they ask you questions about the product the entire time when you're demoing things. So he's like, so if you get a little bit of like tomato sauce splatter on the can opener, how do you clean it? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. I was like, you put it in the dishwasher. And like, he keeps on going. And afterwards he's like, you should never put electronics. And I was like, okay, thank you.
Good to know.
I was like, how would I know that? Like, I mean, I know that, but I'm like, I've never used this thing before in my life. But I was like, I told Logan, I was like, it went as well as can be expected. And he was like, well, do you think you're going to get it? Whatever. And I was like, I don't know. And I don't want to say that I don't care, because I did. I would have loved to have gotten it. But I was like, I'm okay with either outcome. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that there are other opportunities for me out there if this doesn't work. And if it does work, there would have been a whole host of problems. Like, it was 3 days a week, including Sundays for like a weird period. It was like, I was like, we'll cross all those bridges when we get to it. But old me would have like gone into hyperdrive of like, what will my life be like? And I can't go to Ruby Rose on Sundays anymore. I have to do this. And like, I can't write another book if I do QVC. And like, all of those things that are just cause me anxiety and are not remotely helpful or productive. And I was just like, it could go either way. And I'm okay with that. And obviously it went the no way, because as you can see, I'm not on QVC. And I was just fine with it. And he was like, oh my God, were you so anxious when you walked in and you saw all those things? And then that guy gave you the spiel. And I was like, honestly, no. And to be perfectly honest, on camera stuff is no longer a trigger for me. And like, I don't mind public speaking, but like something like that would have caused me anxiety in the past, because he would have started talking. I'd be like, my imposter syndrome would have kicked in. I would have been like, what am I doing here? I'm going to screw this up. These people are watching and talk, you know, they're talking about me, and what are they saying? And what if this is the only shot that I have? Is so fucking anxiety inducing. Yep. And I've just cut that out of my life completely. Yes. That is not a question that I ask myself ever anymore. I don't allow myself to ask it. And honestly, it doesn't even float into my brain anymore. Lots of anxiety things permeate my day to day, but what if this is my only shot is not one of them.
That's such a good one. I mean, that was literally like that, and that can affect personal things as well. I mean, that was my spiral at the beginning, was like, well, this was the only time. So, I mean, that's FOMO, mm-hmm. I guess.
It is FOMO. And also it's also just putting such unnecessary pressure on each thing that you try. And especially I think in creative careers, which involve so much anxiety because of the uncertainty, we have to experiment and we have to try things without fear or expectation. We can't attach expectations to every creative endeavor that this is our big break, or this is going to be a commercial success, or this is going to be the thing that resonates the most with people. Whatever expectations you want to put on it, none of them are worth it or are healthy or are remotely good ideas for people in general, but for people with anxiety, why must we torture ourselves with those expectations?
Yeah, fully.
So that's my 2 cents. And that applies to personal stuff too. It's like when you're like dating someone, don't be like, is this the person I'm going to marry? I have to know right now. Or like, you know, if you make a new friend, it's like, is this my new best friend? Like, are we going to, is this like a long-term thing? Or are we work friends? Like what's happening here? It's like, why bother with the expectations?
Yeah.
We can just let life play itself out, which again, I often have to repeat this to myself and do my best to take my own advice, which some days I'm better at than others.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, is this an anxiety thing? Because my tendency to go from 0 to 60 in those situations is
very common. And any time when I haven't done that, when I've managed to be, I think what we're talking about is not attachment. Like if we were doing the successes episode, every time I have gotten a success, like my book is a good example of this. When I submitted that book proposal, I was so chill. I was just like, that'd be cool, but like that probably won't happen. And I'm really psyched to make this ebook and sell it on my site. And I was totally cool with that. And then I ended up getting to publish the book and like that was cool too. But I was fully non-attached weirdly to that situation. And every other situation that I've shared in this episode of like those essays, I was really attached, you know, the magazine, very attached. And whenever you can muster that nonchalant sort of, I'm okay either way energy, I think that's very attractive. And I think that I really think that's tough. But yeah, do you think it's a magical, or sorry, God, that of course I would start to say magical thing. Do you think it's an anxiety thing to go, like to want to hold on to something and attach in that way?
Yes, because I think we like to control things. So even if we've just made up a possible outcome, I think there's a false sense of control associated with that, being like, this is what I'm going to make happen. And I think often then you're setting yourself up for failure, which will likely have a more negative impact on your anxiety than if you had let go of control in the first place, if that makes sense. Because I think I try to do that too, because part of the fun of life is also surprise. And I think I've always been like, I hate surprises. And I think that's the anxious part of me, is surprises can be good or they can be bad. But just like attaching expectations to positive expectations to something leads to disappointment, going into something with no expectations allows for that element of surprise, which feels, for positive surprise, which feels so wonderful. So having managed expectations, I think the best example in my life recently is when I started doing virtual cooking classes. I was like, like probably a few people will sign up. It'll be, you know, a good way. It'll be a good supplemental revenue stream to replace the money that I'm losing from not doing events and live classes this year. Maybe, you know, 10, 15 people will sign up, whatever. And I also was like, I don't know if I'll like doing it, but I'm going to try. And then I started doing it and it's exploded in the best possible. I literally love these classes. I cannot stress it enough. I look forward to them. Yes. I leave the class like on a total high, because I think it's partially the group energy and I like don't see anyone in quarantine. So it makes me happy. It's like one of the few times I don't feel like I have imposter syndrome, because I'm cooking food that I love to cook. I know how to answer any questions related to that. I get to talk about something I'm passionate about, make my jokes, whatever. I never thought that it would be a big part of my business. And like now I started doing like corporate classes and team building classes for people in private classes. And like, it's wonderful. And I think if I had gone into it being like, you must sell out these classes, you must make these a success, then like, I guess if they had been a success, I would have just been like, well, okay. But the fact that they were a surprise was like so beautiful. It sounds really cheesy, but like, I felt this like weird sense of elation that you don't feel when you plan for something. It's the spontaneity, the happy spontaneity. So I think that's all part of, that's a great goal. And that's something I'm going to think about more seriously as I continue my anxiety management in my life, is just like, manage your anxiety in a way that leaves a little bit of room for spontaneity, even when it's uncomfortable, because it could be the best surprise.
I love that. And I also want to take this as an opportunity to tell everyone, including myself, because I want to see you in this form, sign up for Serena's cooking classes. I need them more than anyone listening. And
there's somebody who's listening that has been in one of my classes. And I like that sense of possible community here.
Yeah, same. I'm sure there are many, and that's really cool. And I think we should all cook together, and maybe we'll do a spiraling cooking class.
Yes. No, we are going to do that. I promise everyone here. We're going to do some sort of joint really class, fun. The two of us. Well, we have gone over our we always try to control these episodes as well by being like, we'll do it in an hour. I loved this conversation. So thank you for making my day today.
Thank you.
And I hope this resonates with whoever is listening right now. Should we do our high, higher, highest? Unless you have absolutely. Any last minute thoughts.
Well, I guess I do have a last minute thought, I guess. I really like this and I'm really grateful for you and this season. Like you said, it just feels really flowing and easy and unattached, you know, like I feel like I'm kind of in that surprise energy with this season, which is cool, but that's not what I was going to say. I just want to, we really just talked about professional failures, which is all we have time for today. But I just kind of can say very quickly, I've had so many personal failures as well. And, you know, we mentioned relationships and breakups, but just personal, like I could have been a better listener in that situation.
Or, oh my God, me too. Yes.
I could have called that person back. Or, you know, one I had recently, it was like, I've made someone special and I've been not as kind to another person. And that didn't feel good, you know, or like just noticing morality or noticing how I could have been a better human being. And I want to give this, this is literally a quote. I didn't even watch this show, but I did watch I saw the trailer on Netflix of the show, The Politician.
Oh, I tried one episode. Do not recommend.
Yeah. I mean, I actually liked it. I just never watched past the first episode as well. People love it. But anyway, in the trailer, I don't know what episode this is from. Ben Platt's character, I think, says, you don't have to be a good person. You just have to do good things. And I think about that all the time of like, I will wrestle with myself a lot of like, am I a good person? Am I even like, you know, maybe that's old religious stuff. I don't know, but I have a lot of like wrestling with that in my mind sometimes, mm-hmm. like being a bad person. And then I realize that like, oh no, we're all good and bad. We have duality within us. Just try it. And I think right now, especially with all of the learning that I'm doing and considering other people, like I acknowledging my privilege, I think all I can do is today try to be as present and as kind as I can be and know that like I'm gonna miss it a lot, but try again and pivot and say I'm sorry when I mess up.
Yes, I wish. And maybe we should revisit this in a whole, like, because like I could talk, I mean, what's been a very serious reality check for me on that front is now doing so much learning and unlearning and taking action in like the form of racial justice and it's like social justice issues. And it's something I didn't discuss for a long time. I mean, obviously I did offline, but I didn't talk about it online. I feel like that was something that was a personal failing and I'm working to do better, which is all we can do. And yeah. I don't think it's healthy to like sit in the guilt. I think guilt is a normal emotion. And so I would really tell anybody that's like has a personal failing in not just in relation to like racial and social justice, like what Katie was saying, it's like when you are a bad listener, or maybe you weren't a great friend, or you didn't show up when you maybe needed to show up for somebody, is like that guilt. I don't think it's healthy. A lot of people are like, guilt is unproductive. And it's like, I don't think life is about productivity. It can be a productive emotion in the sense that you have to work through it. And I think, as we're always saying on this podcast, what you resist persists. If you try to like jam that guilt down and not feel it, it's still there. So mm-hmm. I think processing it and working through it and then trying to use the guilt as fuel to do better is important. And so like, that's what I'm always trying to do is like, yeah, okay. Whether I said something to a friend, or maybe this day and age, it's like I'm learning things at a clip, and I have made so many mistakes, is particularly like in talking about race and like being corrected. You're just like, okay, like now I know this, and like when we know better, we do better. And like sitting and just being like, I'm embarrassed, I feel guilty, like that is not, I don't want to say it's not productive, it's just like, yeah, that can trigger anxiety. But instead of thinking of it like that, be like, okay, I feel guilty or I feel embarrassed. I'm not going to spiral about this. I'm going to acknowledge these feelings and then take an action. Like we've always said in the past, I feel like we've had a lot of discussions about how sometimes when you're feeling really anxious, one of the tools is just to like do something nice for somebody else for no reason.
Yeah.
So like sometimes just being like, oh, I'm guilty, I'm embarrassed, like whatever, like do something. Don't just wallow. Cause like, again, it's not that it's not productive, but it actually, it doesn't help anyone, but it also harms you to just wallow instead of trying to figure out how you can help yourself. And usually helping yourself means doing better.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the interesting thing about what you said about guilt being unproductive or you know, explaining that, I think maybe regret is unproductive because sitting there and regretting something.
Yeah.
Like even those minute things like my spiral today or like wishing if I had just done this a little bit differently, maybe it wouldn't have failed or, you know, I think that is a waste of time.
Yeah.
You can't make a time machine, but you can learn, and guilt is kind of productive, like you said, to use as fuel. So anyway, just that was the last thing I wanted to add, but I feel good to do highs now.
Thank you for adding that. Okay, I will start.
Great.
I have to think about this. I don't know why this.
I know it's hard.
I volunteered. I'm like, oh god, it's not that this is actually like this was not a particularly great week. So I'm thinking about this one. Oh, so still on my champagne for no reason kick from time to time. Although I had my panic attack on Saturday, so not a lot of champagne this week. But we did do no reason champagne prior to that on Friday, which was a delight. Big proponent of celebrating nothing but celebrating everything. I have been doing a lot of my like favorite recipes from Dude Diet Dinner Time in classes and stuff, but ones that I haven't made in a long time. And then it makes me really happy when Logan gets like really excited when he sees what's for dinner. And he's like, are you fucking kidding me? We haven't had this. And I'm like, this is really this is hyping me up. Like, I feel really like excited too right now.
Can you give me a video of that, please?
Yes.
I love Logan content.
And then, what's my highest? Oh, actually, this is weird. This is not my highest. The dinner one is, but we do out of order this week. So Logan made me watch a Beastie Boys documentary, which I was not that pumped about. But you know when you like feel really, really like I was only half paying attention. I was kind of on my phone when I was watching it. And then this one part, I like put my phone down and was like, whoa. And I have these moments sometimes. I had one of the Jay-Z concert ones, like where I get really emo over something that I feel very inspired by. And the Beastie Boys were talking about how they were basically the biggest band in the world after their first album. And like, it just was bananas. Like they went from 0 to 60 like overnight and were just these worldwide celebrities. And then it was their, I don't know, I might get this wrong, so if anybody's a really intense Beastie Boys fan, they might know this better, but I think it was their second album after the first one was so giant that really kind of bombed. And so they went from playing sold out stadiums to playing like 200 person clubs, and they did it for a year. Like over a year. And they were like, it was so weird because it was so jarring to switch gears so fast and have like kind of lose so many fans.
Yeah,
and
that's so timely to this episode.
Yes, which is this is making me really happy right now. And they were like, but we loved the people that were in those clubs. Like they were our real fans, and like they were there for us and for the music. And we like had so many conversations with these people. We partied with them, and they were like, we were kind of sad when we stopped doing this. But then their next, so they were like, this is it, like we're not a big band anymore. And then they fucking released Sabotage, and then they were the biggest band in the world again. It's just like proof that like life is in anxiety, careers, relationships, it's all a series, it's always ebbing and flowing,
not
and
it's
not linear, it's a wild ride. And it just, I got really fired up and I was like teared up, and Logan was like, what is happening? But I thought it was awesome. So anyway, maybe that is my highest. I'll take it.
Wow, that's so cool. Thank you. I really needed to hear that. I think being around a lot of successful people, which I am, and I feel really great about that. And I've been having a lot of like, I haven't really had like a big win professionally, like career wise in a long time. And to know that it's not linear, and that doesn't mean it's not forever. There might be something that I can't even expect, but it might be coming. Like, God, this might be one of my highs, just like hearing that, hearing your high.
I'm glad that resonated.
Yeah.
And also, like, you are making lots of wins, and I know this for a fact, but I know we all experience our own success differently.
Thanks. That means a lot. Okay, my highs. Let's see. Speaking of weird things I watched with a friend, we watched two Disney Channel original movies. We watched Brink.
Oh my God. And, Brink is so good.
Brink and Johnny Tsunami, double feature.
Amazing. Excellent films.
Yeah. And they hold up, which is just really funny and weird. And this is, I don't know where this falls in order. We're not good at ordering these anymore this season. It's just deal with it, everyone. But I finally made my Write Kit, which is the next digital zine, these kits, these courses that I've been making. And I feel so good about it. It took me so much longer than I expected, but I really love it. And completing a project gave me a lot of dopamine. And today is the day I shared about it. And a lot of people are like saying nice things and resharing it. And that just made me feel really loved and part of something and just felt really good.
I love that. I'm so proud of you, and everyone should check out the writing kit. It's amazing.
Well, thanks. And I think too, like, again, back to the transition episode, as of the day we're recording this, like, I'm still in the midst of one, but I do feel a lot of peace somehow within that. Like, I know I have a lot of change in my life, but there's a few constants. And one of them, like, every day I've just been waking up feeling so grateful for my female friends, like, so grateful for you, this group of people that I've become friends with, that I am in like a quarantine pod with around the corner, and my friends mostly in New York. And I just have been feeling quite vulnerable in a lot of different, for like a while, and sharing so many things and just being so supported by the people in my life makes me feel so grateful and high. So that is a high.
I love that. That's beautifully said. And I love you very much. And
I love you more.
Very grateful for you. Thank you everyone for being here. Shall we disclaim?
Absolutely. Are you a doctor?
We are obviously not doctors or mental health professionals of any kind. We're just two friends sharing our experiences with anxiety.
If you're struggling with your mental health, again, we are not experts, but we strongly encourage talking to a professional.
We love therapy. You know this.
We really, really, really do.
And remember, if you're spiraling, you are not alone. You are not weird or damaged or crazy. And you don't owe anyone an explanation for your mental health.
And we love you.
Bye.